Welcome back, everyone, to The Language of Behavior. My name is Joshua Stamper, and I'm here with the wonderful, fabulous, fantastic Charlie Peck, as we are here once again to answer your questions. And before we do so, I just wanted to highlight and shout someone out. We've got a good friend of the podcast, Ryan Reed, who did a fantastic book review of The Language of Behavior. So if you haven't got your copy yet and you want a little bit more information, he dives in a little bit deeper on the Pixel Classroom podcast, and you can find that on YouTube right now. And I'll make sure the link is in the show notes so it's easy to access. I posted on social media for everyone too. So if you're following myself, you can definitely find that somewhere in my feed. And then from there, you can check it out. But Ryan does great work, and super honored, as I know, Charlie, you are too, that he would take the time to not only read the book, but then also jump on YouTube and review it. So we really appreciate him for doing that.
Awesome. I love when people do that. It's just, it takes their time to do it. So it must have made some impact. So it's so appreciated.
Yeah, I loved his perspective. He was talking about how he purchased it at the end of last school year, but just with the craziness of things in his life too, he started to implement it, but then had to kind of, you know, wean that off as things were going on. I loved his transparency, but then he also talked about really loving having the resource for the new school year as he's putting together his classroom. So I'm super glad that he found it useful, but then also that he's implementing those things into his classroom and finding a difference. So that's huge.
Yep, it's awesome.
You actually have a question from your neck of the woods. So if you wouldn't mind sharing that out, I'd love to dive in.
Yeah, I do, because I work with a lot of school counselors at this time of year when we're setting up student referrals for getting care, getting treatment. Mm-hmm. And if you guys don't know that I'm a clinical therapist, I work sometimes. I mean, I wish I could do more, but work with schools as a school-based therapist. And so it's the referral process. So here was the question school counselor asked: what are typical gaps in the student referral process, and how can the leadership team better address those? So what is your take on that first, Josh?
Well, I can't wait to scratch your brain on this one, Charlie, because I know you're the expert. But for me, I know that especially toward the end of my administrative and leadership career, like, we had a ton of referrals and we saw a huge spike in mental health, crowds, issues, things that, you know, kids were doing as far as self-harm or talking about, you know, taking their own life, choosing to self-medicate, you know, all of the things that are going on still to this day. And mental health is obviously a huge issue. And for us, I think, and for myself specifically, I found my biggest battle was once they would go to a facility or a treatment center and then come back, mm-hmm. there wasn't really anything in place for them to kind of have a safety net for them. And it felt just like we just dropped them off into class and just expected everything to be fine and normal. And we didn't talk about it. We just, like, I felt like the plan was very simplistic. It literally was an intake meeting with the counselor, admin, parent, student, and then they were back in class. And so for me, I always found great frustration in that, because I felt like there needed to be a lot more support with the student as far as checking in on their mental health, but then also making sure that that integration process was, I don't know, maybe the runway is a little longer for them to get back into class and not just so abruptly placed. So those were my first thoughts when you asked that question. But I know for you, Charlie, you have a whole system that you help with in all of the aspects of this mental health issue.
Well, yeah, there are a lot of pieces to it. I saw that happen quite a bit. And then from when I was a teacher and didn't understand that mental health system and that crisis piece, I didn't understand it at all. And it wasn't communicated to me, by the way. So part of it is, let's have some training around that. Let's do some, just 30 minutes can really open up that conversation with teachers about when a student is absent. I may not know why they're coming back into my class. I don't know what happened. I don't know what's going on, but what I do know is that something happened and I may not be able to get the information because the kid may not want to give it to me. They have that right. And so when we don't share that information, but we understand that there's something there, we can receive it better and we humanize them more and we're more compassionate. So we're more willing to work with them. But oftentimes when they're just kind of dropped back, like the kid's gone after a week, we have a little animosity. So if we don't understand the scope of this and get any kind of training on this or any kind of conversation, we get a little frustrated as teachers, pretty frustrated. It's pretty disruptive to us too. So I think the communication piece there, even if it's simplified, even if it's a brief, it needs to happen. And not right when the kid is coming back, by the way, not right then. Although I will say, and maybe you can confirm this, Josh, maybe that does happen to you where you have no choice and you have to bring that kid back to the class without the conversation. Has that ever happened?
Yeah. Well, and I think the parent component is pretty strong also, because sometimes the child doesn't want to talk about it. And, you know, if the parents support that, then they don't want that to be communicated to anyone else also. And I think there is still a stigma around mental health and some of the outcries that kids have had, and they don't want that to be associated with their child. And so that's the other unfortunate piece, is because sometimes you feel like that's a hindrance as far as the communication. And then that just causes more frustration, because everyone that's working with that child doesn't really know what's going on and what they need and how they can support them better since they're back. I think when there's a lot of mystery, that doesn't really help anyone. And so for like an administrator, you obviously try to massage that into the parents, let them understand, like, it would be better if more folks knew what was going on to support, but not always they agree with that. And so then you just have to comply with what the parents are seeking.
Yeah. And again, if we had like a 15-minute session, even at the next staff meeting, you all, if you just said that there might be sometimes kids come back to your class, you don't know why, you know, they've been absent. Oftentimes when they go to the hospital in a crisis unit, they're gone for 5 days, sometimes longer. And it gives it time to understand the medication, the scope of the problem. Sometimes there's issues with placement back into the home. There's just so many things that go on. So just know that the admin is, they're doing what they're trying to do, right? Like, we're kind of talking to the administrators now anyway. What can they do? The communication, even the basics without giving details, is just really helpful for the teacher. Just have them understand that there's compassion behind this and they need to welcome that student back in. And maybe give them some advice there, right? Some pieces of information, like when the kid comes back, make sure you make eye contact with them, welcome them back, say, it's nice that you're here, I'm glad you're back, we missed you, right? Instead of making them stand out, just be very kind of soften that approach. You never know what that feeling for them is going to be like to be placed back into a bunch of other kids in the school system. Sometimes the kids want to come back because it normalizes their life and they want to be back in school as soon as possible. So there's a lot to consider. So here are some other things too.
I was going to say, what about the mental health team? Because we mentioned that in the book, but I mean, obviously if no one has something in place, what does that even look like?
Well, clarify that a little bit more, because when I think of a leadership team, the mental health team is there. And sometimes that includes one or two of those rock star teachers who are those leaders who advocate. So what are you thinking?
Well, I was thinking, like, you know, we had a chapter in the book as far as, you know, when a student comes back and then there's needed support. I remember that chapter, and you kind of leading the charge on this one because of your background, both in counseling and social work, that I just remember after you wrote it, I was just like, oh, I wish I had this on my campus, because I feel like this would have been a huge support system for our students that, you know, came back from campus. Because you're right, they may have been gone for 3 days, 5 days, but there were several that I can think of and remember that were gone for months. Yeah. And then they come back and they're just supposed to just be acclimated to the educational environment, like as if nothing had happened. And obviously they've gone through a huge life shift outside of the campus and then coming back. And I just was like, oh, I wish I had like a mental health team to kind of support not only the child, the parent, but then also, like you said, the teachers.
Yeah. Again, it really is about the communication piece, because one of the biggest frustrations I ever had as a teacher was that I cared about kids, and teachers do care. And then when they come back to us and we have no idea what's happened to them and we have no idea how to support them, but yet they're just supposed to be in our space with us and we're not allowed to ask them certain things. I mean, sometimes those kids would open up to us because we have that relationship and they would just tell us what happened. But many times kids are just sitting there. And I don't know if you remember, Josh, but I often say this in my keynote about a student I had who actually died. And I had no idea. She was sitting in our class with a terminal illness, but she didn't want anyone to know. And she especially didn't want me to know, because she didn't like me very much. Because I was young. I didn't understand what questions to ask or to shift my perspective and have compassion. And so what we need to do is educate teachers and communicate with teachers and say, listen, we are the authoritative figure in the classroom. We do have to run a classroom, but also understand that we don't have to assert that all the time. We don't have to show it like that all the time. We have to go down to a level to understand there are so many other things going on with our kids, especially today. These days, there are so many issues going on with our kids that we are not aware of that they're struggling with their identity shifts, with politics influencing how they're now being treated. Now, people are talking to them differently because they feel like they have permission to. There's just so many things going on. So we need to just receive them in our classrooms. And let's not just receive them in our classrooms after they've been in the hospital. Let's receive them like this every single day.
Yeah.
We want to prevent these issues from happening. Yeah. So that question is like, what are the gaps in this referral process? One of the biggest ones, as you and I have just established, is when they come back from a crisis and they've been gone. That's one. That's a whole episode, isn't it?
The whole episode of just underlying issues too. I mean, like there's so many things that are happening in our staff's lives and our kids' lives. Like I just had an associate the other day I was talking with, and I was joking with her, and then she apologized because she made an error and then was like, X, Y, and Z has happened in my personal life. I would have never in a million years known any of that. And I just kind of blew it off of a simple mistake. And then come to find out it was a lot of stuff going on. But that's the same thing as what you're saying, Charlie. I mean, our kids, there's so many things that are going on in their lives that we just are not aware of. And so we just have to understand that everyone's got something that they're dealing with. And it might be small or it might be really, really large. But it is our job to kind of sift through that to see if there's any support that we can provide. But if anyone is, you know, I know, Charlie, you were talking like as a teacher perspective, and I can remember that as a teacher too, of some of the frustrations of when a student came back with very little information. I also think that teachers have a lot of power if they see a need on their campus where a mental health team should exist, that they can start that process to build something out and be the voice of understanding and showing that need to say like, hey, there's something that needs to be constructed for our students to help support them.
Yeah. And that's part of the work that we do is developing that mental health team so that they know what the gaps are in their buildings. Because every building is a different culture. It has a different system and has a lot of strengths already, but then it does have the gaps. So every single team is going to be different. Their need is going to be different. So that's why we go in and we say, okay, what's the need? Let's assess this. Let's go through this whole process first of understanding what's going on in your building already, and then attack that one need. So that one gap, and maybe it is when the kid comes back from the hospital, we really need to address that. Or maybe it's something different. Is how do I know when to make a referral? What do I do about that? And what kind of language do I use when I make that referral? And by the way, how do we make it so darn simple to do for teachers so that they will actually do it? Yeah. And how do we follow back up with the teacher so the teacher knows that the kid they referred is actually getting taken care of? One of the reasons I didn't refer kids after a while is because I didn't hear back after I made the referral and I didn't trust that they were being taken care of. So I would welcome that kid back into my space to talk with me more, which wasn't actually the right thing to do. It really wasn't in hindsight, but I didn't know what else to do. And so now I would link that mental health team to the teachers of that student to say, here's what we need to do. Let's look out for this. Here's how you make a referral. Here's how you say it. Use an observation. Use observational language. What do you see? What do you hear? Not your opinion at all. Nobody cares about that. You need to have what is going on, the sounds, what you're observing with your eyes. What are the actions? What are they saying? So those are the kinds of things that are gaps. And that's why you're right. When we work with the mental health team for the year to help them identify that and perfect that really in their building. Wow. What a difference. They're supporting kids. They're supporting themselves or protecting themselves. And they're all feeling much better about the work that they're doing. And by the way, those behaviors will not show up as much because there's a system in place. Yeah.
Love it. All right. Well, let's jump into our next segment, Behind the Banter, and then we'll close the episode out with an exciting announcement about a summit coming up very, very soon. All right. So Charlie, when you wake up and you're trying to get ready for your day, what is the first thing that you go to drink to get your day kicked off?
Oh my gosh, coffee. But I didn't start being a coffee drinker until I was 40 years old. And it's because I started working out really early.
What, last year?
Yeah, exactly. It was last year. You guessed it.
Just black coffee?
Well, the thing is, it's got to have half and half in it. And it's got to have a little Truvia. 1.5 packets, as a matter of fact. And I got to have it in a tall glass. I know, I sound so high maintenance right now. All right, Josh, I know yours, but I want you to be real specific with yours too.
Oh, I'm really proud. I'm down to 1 cup a day.
Listeners, if you cannot see, if you are just hearing us right now, you should have seen this big ass cup of coffee.
Josh, what? This is big? this is just a normal size cup. It's not the size of my head. No, actually, that was a gag gift that one of my teachers provided me. And I just walked around all day with this mug.
I actually
had coffee in it, and I would drink out of it. And the looks that I got from students and teachers were funny. But no, if I had to be specific, like my go-to, which I actually posted on Instagram the other day, is that we got like a espresso machine. So I can like do a double shot espresso and make an Americano, which I'm drinking right now in the morning. So yes, I am also sounding high maintenance, but it's just black coffee every morning. And I was later in life also when I started to make that switch. Yeah, I was trying to be a little bit healthier, but I guess coffee's not like extremely healthy.
So. It can be okay though. There's a lot of studies saying just as long as it's not too much, it's fine.
Yeah. Everything in moderation, right? Exactly. All right. So Charlie, let's let folks know if they're just turning in for the first time, maybe they haven't heard the last couple of episodes, we have some exciting news for a student behavior solution summit. And so that's happening September 16th and 17th. And we've got a little bit of different times. We've got 5 to 9 p.m. Eastern time on the first day, 4:30 to 9 p.m. Eastern time. And the reason for the second one is because we've got the wonderful Jimmy Casas that's kicking off the second day. And so we wanted to make sure that we had him added to the list of phenomenal folks. But if someone's signing up for free for this event, what are they going to get?
Oh my gosh, you're going to get access to all of our speaker resources. They're going to get access to any replays. So we know it's 2 days. You're not going to be able to be there. It's 2 evenings, really. And you're not going to be able to make it for every single one. We hope you can. We want you there live. It's very intimate and interactive. We're going to interview every single person. And that means we get to hear your questions. You can ask questions right there, or you can email us beforehand with questions you have. But go check out thrivingeducator.org/speakers. You're going to see the lineup that we've got. We have a couple more to add for our bonus speakers too. So we've got the speakers going to be there Tuesday and Wednesday, September 16th and 17th. And then we have bonus speakers, you all. So when you sign up for free, not only do you get their free resources and access to the event, you get access to all of the stuff that's a bonus stuff afterwards. So don't even get me started. This is really elite stuff here. It's high level stuff. And we're focusing on behavior solutions for your school, whichever role you're in. So you got to be there. You got to sign up to get this stuff. And by the way, there's going to be a lot of giveaways.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, every speaker has provided something. So make sure that you're heading over to thrivingeducator.org. That's probably the easiest way to find that. I'm going to have the link directly to the registration. So it's even easier if you're looking to sign up on our show notes. Of course, we'll have that link for you. If you're looking for any other information on what we talked about, maybe you're trying to build a mental health team, or you think that's something that's needed on your campus or in your district, of course, reach out to Charlie and I. We'd love to help support you in that. So you can reach out to Charlie through her website, thrivingeducator.org. You can go over to my website, joshdenver.com/language-behavior. Find, of course, all kinds of stuff, podcasts, blogs, free, downloadable, our services, all kinds of stuff. And then, of course, if you have a question, similar to what we do every episode, and you want us to, you know, look at it and then also provide some type of response and wisdom for what's going on in your campus, maybe in your classroom, we have a bit.ly/LOB questions, and we'd love for you to fill that out. And we would love to give a shout out on the show as we'll answer those in the future. Charlie, is there any last words for this episode?
Yes. Just when we're talking about student referrals and issues, remember, just focus on what the problem is and think about what solutions we can provide. Let's not dance around it too much. Be pretty direct, be transparent, and look for solutions. Let's not get stuck in these problems anymore. Work together as a team and get that outside support if you need it, but just have those conversations. They're so important.
Yeah, such an important topic. And of course, if you want us to respond in the future on this or talk about it in a little bit deeper, of course, fill out that form, that question form, and we'll make sure to do that. If you need any support from Charlie and I, of course, reach out to us. We love connecting with educators all over the country and trying to support in any way possible. And we really do appreciate you listening and, you know, sharing this out with other folks as we are growing this community, growing this listenership each month, and super excited to see what will grow and turn into in the future. So with that, thank you, Charlie, and we will see you next week.
Great. See ya. Thanks.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. We'll see you on the next episode.